Get Published, Episode 17, for Sunday, November 1st, 2009. Hi there, and welcome to Get Published. I'm your host, Mike Plasted. As you may or may not know, today marks the start of NaNoWriMo 2009. For those of you who don't know what that means, NaNoWriMo is short for National Novel Writing Month. The challenge is to write 50,000 words towards a novel in 30 days. You can always write more, but trust me, 50,000 words in 30 days is a huge challenge. Last year, more than 120,000 people worldwide participated in NaNoWriMo, including me. I was successful in the challenge, and I'm working on another nano novel again this year. Because this is the kickoff for NaNoWriMo, I thought it might be fun to talk to two other podcasters and authors and compare notes with them. Why are they doing nano, and what do they hope to accomplish? It's another monster-sized episode, I'm afraid, but a fun one. Thank you for joining me.
Hey, this is J.C. Hutchins, author of Seventh Son Descent, a new science fiction thriller novel available in bookstores right now, and you're listening to the Get Published Podcast.
Please hang up and try again.
And now we're on to the feedback section of the show. But before we hear this week's question, I wanted to give you all an update as to my status. You may or may not know that I have been busily editing my fantasy novel. That editing is almost complete, and I expect to have the novel submitted to a publisher in the next week or so. I'm really anxious to get this out because I've been working on it for a very long time. My fingers are definitely crossed. So why am I sharing this with you now? Well, I haven't talked about my publishing journey much yet, simply because I'm trying to learn how to do it myself. You can expect to hear more about my personal challenges in future episodes. And with that, let's get on to the comments.
Hello, Mike. This is Jack Jaffe, author of Down the Road and the interactive, full-choice audience participation podcast, The Baker's Dozen, all of which is available at 12volttheater.com. Ding! Now, I'm sure this scenario has happened. An author gets an advance of, let's say, a few thousand dollars. Gosh, wouldn't that be great? Now, the publisher expects you to go out and then sell this book, going to conventions, going to book signings. Now, all that expense of traveling around, food, hotels, getting passes to conventions and such, or just paying the ancillary parking expense of going to conventions, if you're lucky enough to be invited and paid for by the convention to be there. That's even going farther off the rails. Now, all that cost comes out of your pocket, plus all the time off work which you need in order to do that. It almost sounds to me like getting published could potentially be more detrimental to your bottom line than if you never sold the book in the first place. I'm just wondering what kind of pitfall, how can you avoid that pitfall in the first place, or is that just kind of inevitable? Anyway, I know I'm putting the cart before the horse, but at the same time, as a young author, it almost seems more dangerous to get published than it does not to.
Great comments, Jack. I think the first thing I would say is that I've never heard of a publisher insisting an author go on tour at their own expense. I think in those cases, the publisher would likely invest in the promotion. Having said that, I think authors have a responsibility to do everything they can to market and sell their own book. That can include, but not be limited to, conventions. I already know that I'll be going to many of the local regional conventions when I get a book out, and there will definitely be costs involved. Beyond that, other conventions are going to be dependent on time and money. I spoke to a graphic novelist about your very question at a convention a few months back. She told me that the first year she had her book out, she attended many conventions at personal expense. She felt it was a worthwhile investment of her time and money. In the second year, things turned around for her. She started selling enough books that not only were her conventions paid for, but she had a little left over. She felt this was directly because of her earlier investment. I certainly wouldn't say that an investment into yourself isn't necessary. Time and money will certainly be demanded. For me, I see those investments as critical. At the end of the day, you have to ask yourself if it's worth it to you. You've got to believe in your book, and more importantly, believe in yourself first. Ultimately, that belief will help you make the decision. I hope that helps. And if you have any feedback, comments, or questions, you can reach me via my voicemail line at 206-203-2031. Or you can also email me at feedback@getpublishedpodcast.com. Or you can follow me on Twitter or friend feed or Facebook. My Twitter address is mplested. My friend feed and Facebook are Michael Plested, and that's Michael spelled M-I-C-H-E-L-L. Whatever method works for you, I encourage you to send me any questions, comments, or feedback you might have. Thanks very much.
Melvin Spall can't make up his mind. Should he leave his mistress or divorce his wife? Should he try to escape the zombie outbreak by driving out of town? Or should he trust the National Guard with his family's safety? With the undead threat around every corner, will Melvin's indecision lead to his own doom? Featuring a zombie outbreak that devastates Denver, an indecisive adulterer, and a series of violent, disturbing, and perhaps even heartrending events of the sort you'd expect when the dead rise up to eat the living. Cheating Death is a roller coaster ride through a horror show both of death and of the heart. Cheating Death is available now as an ebook through smashwords.com. Will be available for order in paperback October 31st through booksellers everywhere, and will be beginning to broadcast November 13th as a serialized audiobook from podiobooks.com and modernevil.com.
Danger. Incoming interview. So, the purpose of our little chat tonight is to talk about NaNoWriMo and why we feel that we need to subject ourselves to it. So, what I would like is for you two gentlemen, my fine guests, introduce yourself. So, Scott, would you like to do the honors?
Sure. Well, my name is Scott Roche, and I am currently podcasting the second half of a novel, oddly enough, that started as a NaNoWriMo project. It's called Archangel. It's basically a supernatural thriller. I also have been a blogger for the last 4 or 5 years, and my blog can be found at spiritualtramp.com. And
I don't have a bell, by the way. Sorry. Ding.
Ding. I think that's all I have to say about that.
All righty. And our other illustrious guest is the man known as Indiana Jim. Jim, go ahead and introduce yourself. And Jim's gone. I bet you he's carrying groceries. So, Scott, can you tell me, is this your first NaNoWriMo? Well, obviously not. You said that Archangel is a nano book. So I guess maybe the better question is, how many NaNoWriMos have you done?
Well, if that question is how many NaNoWriMos have I completed, that would be one.
No, that wasn't the question. How many have you attempted?
Start. This would be number 4.
Excellent.
I did it in 05, 06. I skipped a year, and then I did it in 08, and then this year is 09. So, yeah, I've done. I'm sorry. I skipped 07 and did 08. So 04, 05, no, 05, 06, 08, and 09. Because last year I tried doing a nano and working on Archangel Legion at the same time, and that was kind of a fool's errand. So I switched over to working on just Legion. But the nice thing is that what I did get done last year will eventually get finished and podcast at some point.
Right. Well, and I think a lot of people tell themselves, well, I'm not going to do nano because there's no way I can finish it.
Oh, that's a mistake.
Oh, I totally agree. the whole point of nano, from what all the propaganda will tell you, and really what I believe too, is to get you writing. Whether you finish it or not is, you know, finishing it is actually a bonus.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there are so many ways you can do nano. Like Jared Axelrod, I think last year, did, rather than doing nano the traditional way, elected to write a short story a day, I think.
Right.
And was shooting for that same, you know, word count. But rather than doing it as one novel, he was doing it as many short stories. And I think some people do screenplays. And, I mean, you know, you can do whatever. It's just the thing is to just get you writing. And so, yeah, absolutely. If you don't even start because you might not finish, well, then, you know, you might as well not start writing at all.
Well, exactly. I mean, when I first started looking at writing a book, it was pretty daunting. You know, 100,000 words, how in the hell am I ever going to do that? It's even 250 words a day, I'm going to be at it forever.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when I first started writing on a quasi-regular basis, you know, it was hard for me to get up to 2,000 words in a story. All my first short stories were very short. And, you know, the idea of getting to 10,000 words, much less 50,000, was daunting. And so that first year that I tried, I think I made it to 20-some thousand, and I was tickled because even though it was incomplete and it remains incomplete, I look at that as a milestone because I got past, that was the longest thing I had written to that point, and it wasn't finished, but that's okay. It pushed me and it made me, you know, figure out what it felt like to get, you know, past 10,000, past 15,000, and see how big that was. And it really isn't that big.
No, that's for sure. I know the first year I did nano, it was only a matter of days after I had finished my first novel. And that first novel took me 7 years to actually finish from the first word of the first chapter until I actually wrote the end. So, you know, I approach nano with a lot of trepidation, thinking, okay, 7 years to write 100,000. I think 50,000 is maybe well beyond my capability in 30 days.
Right. Right.
But happily it wasn't.
Yeah. And I think that that's the beautiful thing about doing this is, you know, you kind of, even if what you write is utter crap, and it may not be, I mean, there's some people that actually crank out some pretty good stuff. I'm looking at Nathan Lowell. I mean, you know,
yeah, so, South Coast.
Yeah. So, you know, it may not be crap, but even if it is, and even if you don't necessarily finish, it gives you a sense of scope. It gives you a sense of what you are capable of and what you're not capable of. And if you don't even, once again, if you don't even begin, then you don't have anything to edit and you don't have anything that gives you that sense of scope. And as a writer, whatever pushes you, you know, past what you think is your breaking point, I think is a good thing.
Very true. And it sounds like Mr. Jim is back.
Yes.
I knew it. Jim, do you want to introduce yourself?
Oh, yeah, I just carried a child up the stairs. I need a minute.
Now, are we talking like a full-grown 18-year-old child or a smaller one?
No, mine are 8, 7, and 5.
Okay. All right. Well, I just wanted to understand if the heavy breathing was, you know, appropriate or if it was just put on.
It was a really, really bad Darth Vader impression. Luke, I am out of shape.
Luke, I am your brother-in-law. Okay, very good.
I am your uncle's cousin's brother's sister's roommate. What does that make us? Absolutely nothing. Another great Rick Moranis role.
Yeah, that would be, what, Darth Helmet. Dark Helmet, right, from Spaceballs.
Yeah, so I'm Indiana Jim, host of the Adventures of Indiana Jim, strangely enough.
Bing.
And the 49ers fan cast. 49ers fan podcast from the National Football League. You have to say it that way because otherwise the NFL will sue you.
Okay, so you need to sound a little over the top and pretentious. Nice.
Right.
I like it.
I like the old NFL Films announcer. That's how he sounded.
Right.
The frozen tundra of Lambeau Field, et cetera, et cetera.
And you are also in the process of casting, or you're probably just about finished casting your next podcasting project.
I wouldn't say almost finished.
Okay.
The major roles are pretty much mostly all cast. A lot of minor filler stuff that will have to be probably filled in later on as the production gets going. As I need them, probably put a call out on Twitter and say, hey, I need, you know, this, and see what happens. But most of the major roles are filled. T. Morris is in the cast as far as people you guys would recognize. May Breakall is playing one of the major roles. So, mm-hmm. And then some other voice talent that aren't, you know, widely known across the podosphere. But if you go to voiceactingalliance.com, they have a forum there where, you know, you can get voices for all sorts of audio projects.
Excellent. So the question I had asked Scott while you were carrying groceries, mm-hmm. is...
And children.
And children. Yes, sorry. Can't forget the children. Is, have you done Nano before? And if you haven't, when have you done it? And what have you managed to produce out of Nano?
If I haven't, when have I done it? Well, that would be...
Never. Yeah, I know. All right. Thank you very much, Jim, for semantics. I like it.
The smart ass.
It's what I do, man.
Heavy sigh.
Me and grammar. Takes a writer to understand grammar, but one of these days I'll be is one. What was the question again? Had I ever done it? No.
This is your first year.
I am a virgin, yes.
Well, you're only a virgin once, so they say.
Right.
Although I think some starlets would disagree. They seem to be born again virgins sometimes.
Right.
So how did you come to the dark side to do Nano for the first time? Whatever convinced you that this was a wise and intelligent thing to do?
Well, as to that, I don't think I'm entirely convinced that it is. But I think it was a convergence of the planets. I had gotten the current novel finished, and the project that I had intended on moving on to next is a little bit broader scope than I think I like. And so basically Nano came up and people were talking about it. I'm like, well, I have this particular story idea that I've been wanting to put some work in on. And I thought that Nano sounded like a convenient excuse to do a lot of writing. And so I thought, well, you know, why don't I see if I could generate some momentum so that once I start podcasting The Last Guardians, then I can be in the process of finishing up the next work.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
You know, I thought if I had 30 days and wrote on it every day, I could probably get out a significant chunk of it. And it'll be shorter than The Last Guardians, which is about 110,000 words. So I'm probably aiming for 85, 90 on this one.
Okay. So I'll just throw this question. Well, before I throw it out, I guess I should say what my Nano credentials look like. And this is actually my fourth year.
You got Nano cred, huh?
Yeah, I have Nano cred. This is my fourth NaNoWriMo, and I have won the past 3 years. So,
ooh, he does have Nano cred.
I do, and my first book is actually the second book I ever finished. And as I was telling Scott, I started writing. Well, I finished my first book about 4 days before NaNoWriMo began, and that was a 7-year book that I had finished in about 100. Well, it was about 90,000 words when I finished it.
Oh yeah, I can relate to that.
Yeah, 7 years to get the 90 done, and I proceeded to go and beat the living hell out of my keyboard, and I was finished in 3 weeks. I had my 50K done. And that was a YA novel, which I have very high hopes for still. I've actually had two publishers interested in it, although both have declined it at this point.
I saw you tweet that, and I was like, you know, that's pretty cool. Because, you know, one of the things about Nano, there is some negative emotion around Nano from some writers, especially some published writers. And I'm not telling either of you anything that you don't already know, but mm-hmm. you know, I was reading Storyfix, which is my new favorite writing website of the moment. And the article, the most recent article, was basically three ways to succeed at Nano and one way to fail. And I'm surprised that it was so positively titled, because the author for the first half of the blog post seemed to indicate that there is no way to succeed, because even if you write 50,000 words, they're all going to suck and you're not going to get anything published from it.
Awesome.
So that was encouraging.
Absolutely.
But I do want to say positively about the article, the advice that they gave on how to succeed was good advice. And you know, but my point to them was, and I made a comment on the blog, was, does anybody literally honestly think that they can plunk down 50,000 words, you know, plus, not touch it, and mail it off to a publisher the very next day and get published?
No. Because
if anybody does think that, then they're deluded. And there may be some people that think that, I don't know, but
there's a lot of deluded people.
That's true. you know, but you know, if anybody does actually think that, yeah, he's right, they're wrong. But I don't think the majority think that. I hope not anyway. At least not the ones that actually do want to get published and have really given it some thought, because you know, Nano is about your first draft.
Mm-hmm. Well, and quite honestly, I don't care if it takes you, if you spend 30 days writing something or 30 years writing it, if you don't ever touch it, it's not publishable.
Right.
Well, and the thing that tickled me were two of the tweets that I got back from that, that indicated, yes, you could get it published. One of which was from somebody who self-published.
I remember that one.
Yay. And the other one was from somebody who podcasted it, and they counted that as it getting published. And I was like, no, that's not quite what I meant. But I like one guy and I really respect the other guy. So, you know, I get what they were saying, but they apparently didn't get what I was saying, and I had to explain it to one of them.
Yeah. Which, of course, brings up another delusion, is that you can podcast your novel and then suddenly a publisher is going to notice.
Yeah, there's nothing sudden about it.
Fails to take into account the 6 podcast novels Scott Sigler already had out, or 5, before he got picked up by a major publisher.
Yeah, no kidding. Right. No kidding. Right.
Or the fact that, you know, JC had Seventh Son out for first he wrote the novel, then he tried to get it published traditionally for years, and then he podcasted it, and then he shook his butt for 2 years. 3 years?
Yeah, I think so.
You know, just milking it for everything it was worth and getting stuff out there and making content happen. And finally, he gets the first one published, and there's no guarantee that he'll get the other two published. So I mean, you know, it definitely, you're not just, you know, recording it and then next year you get a contract.
Well, at the same time, JC was, you know, it was 3 books. So as far as...
Right.
As far as regular content as far as regular content is concerned.
Very nice.
Speaking, I can has grammar. As far as
me speaks clearly.
Yeah, it took the same amount of time as 3 novels. But as far as Nano is concerned, the biggest thing to me that relates to the publishing industry is, of course, the old adage that writers write. And writers who want to be writers who get paid, they write every day. And I don't.
Yeah.
For myriad reasons. But what NaNoWriMo does is, I think, give the average Joe a taste of what it's like to be a working writer. And sometimes you go through that and you realize, hey, this is great, I could totally do this. And other people, you know, they go through it for the hobby factor. But, you know, it goes back to what you were saying, Scott. You know, it's all about your first draft. And, you know, it's about hammering out as much as possible. And then you go back and revisit it. And it's learning how to turn off the internal editor and turn on the working writer.
Right.
No, you're absolutely right, Jim. And in fact, that is why my first book took me 7 years. I think
took me 10.
Okay. Well, so yeah, you and I are on the same page. I think the first chapter I had 30 odd iterations before I finally said, okay, I'm not touching it anymore.
Mm-hmm. But and for mine, it's kind of funny because basically I started work. The idea germinated late in my college career. And it actually was inspired by the track listing on Michael Flatley's Lord of the Dance.
Okay.
You laugh.
I do.
But what it had was the outline of a really good fantasy tale to it. Because when I saw it, I was like, you know, that could really – I started looking for story ideas anywhere. And I was like, that has a progression to it that really seems to fit. In fact, there's a gypsy that plays a major role in the story. And there was a track on there for a gypsy type dance thing. And so that's where it all came from. But that was just the basic germination. When it really took hold was when I moved out to Indiana and got married and I started reading Lord of the Rings again. Excuse me. And, you know, as writers read, their writing tends to take on the tenor of what they've been reading. And I was not widely read in the fantasy genre by any means. So I was sort of getting back into it by reading Lord of the Rings. And so, you know, about 7 drafts ago, our hero was waylaid by the mystic gnomes of Jarmine. That's stupid. Basically, this book started out as this epic Beowulfish sort of, you know, thing. And it took a lot of trial and error. It took a lot of reading. It took a lot of breaks. Circumstances in your life, you know, maturity, all kinds of things. They have 3 children in the middle of all this, job changes, and just everything. And I look at what I've written now. It's like a lot of people say, you know, you take your first book, put it in a drawer. Take your second book, put it in a drawer. Take your third book, read through it, then put it in a drawer. Then by the time you get to your fourth book, you probably got something that you can work with. And honestly, The Last Guardians is probably, like I said, it's probably the 7th draft of the same book. But I felt it necessary for my own psyche to finish it, to finish the story. And it's become something I think that can be worked with. Now, I don't necessarily think it's mainstream fantasy publishable, but I definitely – I had to finish it because the story just wouldn't leave my head.
Right.
Yeah, no, I hear you. That's more or less the same as mine. It's been rewritten many, many times, and it's not the same book that it started out as.
Yeah, and I think it takes a lot of to me, I guess, you know, when we create something, we create it, and it's this wonderful, beautiful thing. We put on a pedestal, behold my creative work, and we don't want to screw with it, you know? And it goes to the adage of killing your darlings. And I think as far as you and I are concerned, Mike, and I don't know how you can attest to this, Scott, or others, but it seems there's 2 writers. There's one kind of writer that says, ah, this is crap, and tosses it and does something completely different. And then there's us that make this pile of crap and goes,
this is my crap.
I'm going to cut that away. I'm going to change this. I'm going to mix this around. Oh, I can borrow this from there. And we start – it's like Dr. Frankenstein. It lives, you know, and we're sort of – we don't want to give up on something, but we're not afraid to perform surgery on it to make it different.
Well, I think I might be the former of the 2 kinds, because I started my first novel maybe 11 years ago, and I didn't get very far into it, and I realized it was pretty crappy, and so I put it away, and I'll probably never go back to it. My second novel that I started was the first nano project that I did. And I had never written anything, you know, when I wrote my first novel or tried writing my first novel, I didn't set out with a word count. I had no idea what the heck I was doing. So for this first nano project, I said, well, okay, I've always wanted to write a novel. The last one I tried was crap, but I didn't have any idea what I was doing. I still don't really know what I'm doing, but at least I have a word count goal. I never outlined anything other than term papers in college, because all I had written up to that point, fiction-wise, were short stories. And so I said, you know, I've got no idea what I'm doing, so I'll just jump into it with both feet, which is how I tend to do things. And I jumped into it, and it was a complete disaster. I kind of liked what I wrote, but you know, I don't really feel any necessary. I was telling Mike, you know, I don't really know. I will probably revisit it at some point because I think it's got some short story material that I could salvage from it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, okay, so Archangel is the first novel that I will have completed. I've got to write the epilogue and it'll be done. It's basically two novellas that are really just one novel. And it's going to be around 100,000, 110,000 words when I'm done. And I'll have no problems going back and, you know, doing some line edits and some grammar edits and what that kind of thing, tighten it up. But when it's done, it's going to be done. And I'm not going to do the whole, you know, swap this around, push this around. I mean, if it's good, it's good. If it's not, it's not. I'll do some edits to it, but it's not a darling. It is what it is. It'll succeed or fail based on that. And then I'll move on to something else and do something else.
But so, it reminds me of the first time I tried to outline a novel. Like Roman numeral 1, period, chapter heading, you know, A, period, B, B, I, you know? This isn't really the way this is supposed to work.
Yeah. Well, I actually tried outlining a novel as part of I was doing a correspondence course for writing novels. And one of the exercises was send us the full outline of your novel. And I thought, okay, you know, I've been working on this. I can do it. By that point, I knew how long each chapter should probably be. Mm-hmm. And so I had this book in my head and I outlined the book in my head and realized I only had about a third of a book.
Mm.
Mm.
And all of a sudden, this really easy exercise took me 2 months to finish. And the first few chapters were very detailed in what I expected to have happen. By the end, it was, you know, it would be a one sentence. Whoever the protagonist, he, you know, does this and he does that. But it was very, very slim.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, that's the approach that I have taken to outlining both Archangel and then the current nano project that I'm doing is I'm basically just doing little 1 to 2 sentence. Basically, I'm using Scrivener because I'm fortunate enough to have a Mac. And I've broken it into 3 chunks, and I've sort of written a couple of, like a short paragraph for each one of the chunks. And then for each chapter, under each one of those chunks, I'm writing like a 1 or 2 sentence little blurb. And so that's how I'm doing the outline for this nano. And I think that's going to work. I really think that's going to work.
Well, and I think there's a misconception about outlining, and that is that you have to start with a form. You know, you have to start with exactly where you know everything is going. And sometimes, you know, people say, well, my writing is organic. Well, sometimes the outlining is organic.
Absolutely. And
very true. Sounds like your outlining is kind of organic. The project that is too broad in scope to get going on next is sort of inspired by both Westerns and medieval fantasy, sort of as a, like I had this image of a group of knights that were like, you know, you picture the guys from Tombstone, you know, this set of knights that were above all others and sort of had a Western imagery to it, but, and Borderlands and things, and I don't know.
But not the gunslinger.
Right, no. no, they all have swords, but
okay.
It basically, my image is imagine John Ford directing an Akira Kurosawa script about medieval knights.
Ooh, nice.
You kind of got where I'm going. But it started out just as one character, and I had written a short story back in college about this one character, and then shelved it for a while, and then when I came back to this character, it went kind of through different permutations, and I ended up with one particular knight where some things happened to, and he ends up being stripped of his title at the end of the first volume. And everything branched out from there. Like I did a character sketch on him and kind of described some things that he does, and there was a character in there. So I went to that character and described things that he does, which led to another character and another character and another character. And pretty soon, I had this mushrooming of a plot going on. And it was probably the most enjoyable experience I've ever had outlining anything, because the world building just grew out of one character sketch. And sometimes it's just You have to start with what you know, and what you know will always lead you to something else. And you can't be afraid just, well, I don't have everything yet. I'm not ready. No, start with what you know and branch off from there.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So that actually leads to a really interesting question, and that is, how are you both planning on approaching NaNoWriMo this year? Are you going
with trepidation?
In? Yeah, me too.
Confident I won't be able to get it done. Look at it this way. The first day of NaNoWriMo is Sunday, and I will be at the 49ers and Colts game in Indianapolis. So,
where are your priorities, man?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
I'm sorry. I interrupted your question with jackassery, as I usually
do. No. When I ask how you're approaching it, and certainly how you're emotionally going to be approaching it is important. Are you planning on writing every day? Are you outlining everything thoroughly before you go in? Or are you going to let it be very, well, organic in its growth?
Well, like I said, I've got basically the first 2/3 of it outlined in that sort of organic is the word that we keep using, and I think that's appropriate way because it's not your typical Roman numeral sort of, you know, break it down sort of outline. If I manage to finish that before Sunday, which I think I will, then I'll have something that I've never had before, not even with Archangel, which is a complete story arc outlined. And that's my goal, certainly. But that doesn't mean that I'll have all the plot holes figured out. It doesn't mean I'll have all the action figured out. It just means I'll have a basic idea of what the beginning, the middle, and the end are, and then what some of the major action points are. And I will say that in the process of doing this, the 2/3 that I've gotten through so far, I've already discovered some plot holes, and I've already discovered some issues that I'm going to run into and some motivations for characters and things that I'm glad I'm figuring out now, because frankly, some of those plot holes are halfway through. And if I was at November 15th and I ran into these, I wouldn't have the presence of mind to deal with them. Much less
to
think of ways.
I had plot holes.
So if I guess as far as word count goes, though, what I am going to try and do, and this is the piece of advice that I have heard given for Nano and that I give everybody that I talk to about it. And that is, if by 10 days in, you can be halfway finished, that's a good thing. So by the 10th of November, I'm going to try and be at 25,000 words, because one of the bad things about it being in November is Thanksgiving. And I always say, oh, we'll see, I'll be on vacation and I can write more. BS, you know, that's not going to happen. So, you know, that means that I'll have to push myself a little harder for the first week. I think I can do it. And, you know, moreover, if I want to be successful, I think that's what I have to do. And that's for me, you know, that's not necessarily for anybody else, but I just know I have 3 kids and a wife, and November, Thanksgiving, we're going to be going to the beach, hopefully for 5 or 6 days. And I do have a laptop, but I don't want to have to spend my Thanksgiving writing if I don't have to. So, you know, because I'm going to want to spend it with family. So, so yeah, that's how I'm approaching it, with a sharp, pointy stick, a little bit of attitude, and the notion that I really need to just do this thing if I want to finish it. And I've got the tools and I've got the outline to do it. And I think that'll make it easier. Not easy by any means, not fooling myself, but that's my approach.
Yeah. How about you, Jim?
Well, you know, I've followed the NaNoWriMo trend for several years and just kind of, you know, been witnessing its growth, but I'm still new to it. And I'm not sure how many people approach it organically, because on the face of it, it sounds like a purely organic experiment, you know, write something for 30 days and see what happens. But, you know, and apparently a lot of other people approach it with full outlines. In my case, well, it's fine. No, it's not meant to be like, you know, talking you down, but I mean, it's just
the smart people, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So what I have is essentially the beginning of the plot and I know where it's supposed to end up. I just don't know how to get there. And luckily for me, it's a simple enough plot. Basically, I started this short story, and I try to write short stories, but they always end up as novels in my head. I cannot write a short story. You know why? Do you know why?
Why?
Because I can't put that much effort into writing something so short.
Right.
That, you know, I would feel like I've wasted creative energy creating this character that is awesome that lasts for 15,000 words and you're done. I can't do that.
Yeah.
So
I get that.
That's when it turned into, well, maybe I can make this a serialized character.
So your your stories are more character driven than is what you're saying.
Usually, yes. Okay. Usually, the plot is secondary to making the characters work, but the plot, of course, is important. But it's just a close second to making good characters, and so usually my plots develop out of the character. And so, basically, what I have is this: a guy who escapes from an imperial prison colony, flees to the lowest, dirtiest, nastiest, most worthless city in the empire, the one that nobody pays attention to, the one that everybody's forgotten. Well, turns out the regional governor's daughter is missing. So dude needs money because he's got to eat. And also, he wants a pardon. So the problem is, if he goes, hey, I'd like to go rescue your daughter, they're going to know who he is. The governor's going to send him back to prison, and that's not really going to help him. So what he has to do, find out the details, go find her on his own without anybody knowing he's doing it, and then bring her back hoping that he gets a pardon.
Makes sense to me. Yep.
That he can get a good, decent meal out of it. So, and then, of course, in the end, the plot takes a turn, a completely different turn, launching us into a sequel. So that's all I know.
Well, and that's a good approach, though.
Somewhere in the middle is the interesting part.
There you go.
I dissed you, Jim, but actually with Archangel, the only successful nano thing I've done so far, that's how I did it. I mean, I had the first, I don't know, 7 or 8 chapters outlined, and I had the 4 or 5 major characters, a few sentences on each and a physical description, and that's all I had going in. And then I had a rough idea of what I wanted the end to be. I think that's better than certainly nothing. And it is a valuable approach because there's nothing wrong with writing organically. I think as long as you have a little underlying structure and you kind of know where you're going with it, even if you don't know exactly how you're going to get there.
I used to waste time, or at least I felt like I was wasting time. And maybe writing in fantasy or science fiction is a little different. I've tried real world plots before and they just don't work for me. But I found myself bogged down with physical descriptions. You know, this guy's 6'3". You know, this guy's 6'6". He has brown hair, green eyes. No, wait, let's make him brown. You know, I would get bogged down with that sort of thing. And it's like, and this is not saying anything to you, Scott. It popped into my head when you mentioned it. Those are the little things that can distract somebody from creating a good character.
Oh, sure. In my mind.
If your plots extend out of good characters, my primary goal, first of all, is their mental makeup. What makes this person act the way they do? What makes this person think the way they do? What has built this person into who they are? And eventually the physical descriptions come later. It's like
secondary.
The most minor thing. Yeah, it's so minor what the character looks like. It doesn't matter what a character looks like in a plot. What matters is how they act and why they do what they do. Now, of course, you know, if you have like, you had a basketball coach or football coach or whatever it was. I guess I played him. he was a basketball coach, I guess. And, you know, you have a big, stout, muscular guy as a basketball coach. You know, those kind of things, a soldier's not going to be 5'4" and 97 pounds. Those things do come into play. But I think a lot of people just get bogged down by that and they just need to center on what makes this a really interesting character, what will move my plot forward. And then you go from there.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think in my case, as I'm writing, I write a little more cinematically. And so I try and envision things in my head. So for me, appearance is important. Now, I don't get bogged down in it, But I think, you know, for me personally, appearance is important, but it doesn't. Yeah, you're right. What's more important ultimately is the character and what they are, what motivates them and who they are and the inner conflict that they have. That's vital. And that's the bonus that we get as writers that are working in prose or, you know, fiction is we get to go into that, whereas cinematic writers, screenplay, you know, authors don't get to do that. You know, they have to show everything and put everything in dialogue and hope that the, you know, director gets it right and that the actors get it right. So, you know, yeah, absolutely. What you're saying is true.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I would agree with you too, Jim. I've always been of the opinion that the reader really has, you have to give the reader the, you got to give them their head so they can go and actually start visualizing what you're creating, because every person who reads what you write is going to get something different from it. So if you start describing your characters right down to the mole on their left butt cheek, there's going to be nothing left to the imagination. And really, you know, works of fiction, the whole idea is to give their imaginations a workout, let them do some of the work when they're reading.
Yeah. Right. Unless that mole turns out to be a royal birthmark, it becomes important the later royal, on.
What was it? The purple Pimpernel.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, you have to.
Ethel has the brew that is true.
Yeah, you have to certainly the character motivations and the character conflict and stuff is of utmost importance.
Yeah, I feel like I write the way you do. You know, I'm writing the novelization to the movie in my head.
Right.
And that's because I watch so many movies and I love the way movies do things. But one author that a lot of people might not be familiar with is Glenn Cook, who is really kind of a minimalist. He does leave a lot to the imagination. And in fact, sometimes he goes whole pages without dialogue tags, but he does it so well that you know exactly who's talking to who.
Oh, yeah.
It's really quite amazing. And his description, he could give you one sentence of description that tells you, that fires every synapse in your brain and you know exactly what's going on.
Yep.
And so to me, it was good training to read Glenn Cook, because your imagination is working overtime. And you can see a great example of a guy who, using very little description, evokes such stark imagery in your brain. It's just phenomenal. And that's something I'm trying to learn how to evoke myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good point.
And there's another, I read last year, The Road by Cormac McCarthy. And I don't know if either of you guys have read it or not, but
was it epic fantasy?
No.
Well, was there swords and blood and beheadings and those?
No,
things?
There was cannibalism.
Yeah,
there was a very dark book, but yeah, the Cormac McCarthy took, and this is the only book of his I've ever read, but you know, he didn't use any dialogue tags. Most of the story was dialogue. With some description, but yeah, everything when he did describe something, or when, you know, there was something done in action, there was so much compressed into that sentence that, you know, you knew exactly what was happening. You could picture it in your brain, and you didn't have to go through all this flowery sort of, you know, dialogue or flowery sort of, you know, expression of setting. It was powerful, and that there's something to be said for that, for sure.
Now, this is a bit of a loaded question, and that not to cut that discussion off. If you want to keep going, we can. But I was going to ask what you are hoping to actually get out of Nano this year. Is it purely words, or is there more to it than that?
I'm hoping to get a workable novel going forward.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, you know, I am loath to dispose of any ideas.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why I create a character in 1997 that comes back in 2003. You know, I just can't get rid of ideas. And so I'm going into this very seriously, using it as an excuse to get working on a project I need to work on anyway. So I feel like it gives me a little extra motivation. You know, I've got the word count thing going on. You got other people doing it. Everybody's kind of into it. So it just sort of seemed like the right time. So what I hope to get out of it is, like I said, a workable novel going forward. And even if it's not readable, even if I have 50,000 words of scaffolding, I will have something that I can work with going forward.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, when you get words down, then you have something worth editing.
Yeah. Right. And I'm with Jim. You know, I plan on this being a workable novella, at least. It may be a full novel. I don't know. I do already know something about my main character, Lucky. This is not her only story. I am like Jim in the sense that I will make characters that, you know, hopefully the protagonist, but not always. I've had some secondary characters that surprised the crap out of me. But you know, I make characters and I want to reuse them because if I invest that much time in them, you know, I hate to, you know, put them away. I intend for this to be definitely a workable novella, maybe a novel, and definitely a podcast. So, you know, I think that if this year's Nano is anything like the year that I did Archangel, this may just be, you know, the first half of something, or it may be scaffolding, like Jim says, and I fill it in. But yeah, this will definitely be, I'm already in love with the universe and the characters. So this will be something, you know, that, I'm going to run with in the future.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I look at the 50,000, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
The 50,000 isn't even in my mind. Basically on any given day, I can churn out a couple thousand words in half an hour. That's really not the hard part. The hard part is knowing where I'm going with it. But, you know, I'm looking at, I want to get more than 50,000. I want to get 80 out of this because, you know, if I press really hard, I can get probably 4,000 a day, with discipline, obviously, and applying myself to it. So it shouldn't be that hard for me to carve out the time. The problem for me is carving out the mental energy.
Yeah.
And staying focused because right. There's so many things we distract ourselves with, especially as geeks. You know, I've got podcasting. I've got two different podcasts.
Internets.
Right. I've got, you know, football stuff, and I've got plenty of PlayStation stuff to occupy my time. So, and children, and of course, the wife also. So, you know, all these.
Good of you to mention the wife.
Right. He saved the best for last.
Yeah. She's not in the room. So, basically, I'm like, you know, I don't really know if I can do this or not, but I'm going to give it a shot. And it also, you know, when people say, hey, how come you haven't done anything more with Last Guardians? Because of NaNoWriMo. Hello. So, you know, built-in excuse.
Nice. Very nice.
But basically, nice. Basically what I have to do is prioritize the time.
Yeah.
And that's the hardest thing, I think, for writers. Because, and a lot of people say, well, I have writer's block. Oh, I can't write anything. I can't do this. I can't do that. And what I've told people, and this is what I've discovered, and I think I've learned this from Scott Sigler, but also before that, Michael A. Stackpole and other authors. I'm not going to say George R. R. Martin because that dude takes so much time off. It's ridiculous. but he can afford to. It's loaded, so why not? And what are they going to say? George, I'll never read your books again. Right. you know, whatever, they're gonna pay him, you're gonna read it, so fuck it up. What I've learned is that if you want to write, again, make a living, you have to write. You have to sit your butt in the chair and you have to do it, and it's really, 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 really hard the first time. Extremely hard. 5,000 words later, you're going, why didn't I do this before?
Sometimes
it's hard to start your engine every time, but once you get in the car and start driving, it gets easier and easier and easier. And I'm guaranteeing people out there, if you're listening, that not suggesting people don't listen, like, of course, but
yeah, sure you are.
And you're listening to this and you're thinking, gosh, it's hard for me to write. Oh, I can't do the button chair thing. Do it. I promise you there's green pastures on the other side.
Somebody and it was, I think it was I'm not even going to try and think and try to remember who it was, but it was somebody on Twitter said, one of the big podcast writers said that as soon as you finish something, you know, big writing project or whatever, as soon as you finish something, you should sit your butt down and record how you feel in that moment. And that anytime you have a hard time getting motivated, you go back and you listen to how enthusiastic you were when you finished that, whatever it was, because when I finish a long bout of writing, you know, a couple hours or whatever, it's magnificent. And I'm kind of in the zone and it's cranking and it's working and words are coming. And I just need to remember that when I try and turn the engine over, you know, when I'm cranking that thing cold, that once I get it going, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, you need that little jump start to get going.
Yeah. So, I mean, just think about, you know, how it feels when everything is juicing and you've got those words, you know, coming out of your keyboard, and that it should help you get started.
Sounds like a Murrism.
It might have been. But yeah, I mean, let's just say I said it. And
and the other thing, being geeks, of course, and amateur writers that we are, having so many hobbies and staying up late so often. If you want to be successful at NaNoWriMo, I suggest this. Get some sleep.
Yeah.
Take a shower.
Yeah.
Eat 3 square meals a day, and it'll help. Because I found this, of course, getting older, being, of course, only in my 30s, but whatever, you know. We get older, we can't do the thing that we did at 22. You know, when you're 32 and you've got 3 kids, it's rough. So I have to make sure, you know, like right now, if I don't get into bed right now, you know, I can't get up at 7 o'clock the next morning and function. And people used to make fun of President Bush for going to bed at 10 o'clock, but I know why. He was older and he had a lot of work to do.
Yeah, so, no doubt.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, you know, my
entire country to run into the crapper.
Hey.
No, this isn't a political show. Sorry. I'm sorry.
I thought we had an unspoken truth.
Sorry. I had to go there just because it was you, and I had to go there. communist.
Right. The trouble with communism is
you. No. This isn't a political show, remember?
It's very simple. Communism only works when your dictator is absolutely 100% perfect. Right. And that's Jesus. So anyway, moving on. it's the only place I see communism working.
This public service announcement has been brought to you by The Adventures of Indiana Jim. Bing.
And the Southern Baptist Convention. No. What were we talking about again?
Getting to bed early.
If you want to have the mental focus, I know for me at least, I have to stop living like a college student, living like a geek, and actually trying to live responsibly, because if I want this to be my job, I have to treat it like a job.
Absolutely. And
a lot of people go, oh, that stifles the creative process. No, you just don't know writing.
Yep. Yep.
You just haven't been published. You don't know what it takes. I mean, and this is the thing where podcasters as authors immediately have an angle on the marketing, because you're starting to apply business principles. Do something, yes, that is fun, but if you want to make money at it, you got to work at it. And yeah, sometimes it can be a job. But if you really, really want to tell yourself you want to do it, then you better find out if you can do it.
Right. Yeah. Well, and that the other piece of advice I've heard, which applies directly to what Jim is saying, you know, is, and again, I forget who said it, but one of you guys might remember, that there was an actual published author that said, you know, I only write when the muse hits me. Fortunately, the muse hits me every time I sit down at the keyboard at 5 o'clock in the morning and start writing.
Yeah.
You know, so
no, more like I go hit my muse and say, get over here.
Yeah.
No, I've heard different authors say things like, when it's your full-time job and you know that your paycheck depends on you being motivated and finding your muse, you find your muse.
Right. You give your muse an alarm clock.
Yeah.
They be here on time. Yep. Punch your card.
Well, one thing that I want to make sure that everyone listening really understands is the whole Nano experience, it's not just about you being, you know, fighting your keyboard to try to hit 50 or in your case, Jim, 80,000 words. Nano, I discovered in the first year I did it in 06, Nano is really a huge community effort. And I was really fortunate. We had really good municipal liaisons in my area. So the meetups were happening and I went to the meetups and met some of the other Nano writers. They had a chat room set up so we could get on without leaving our computers every night and do word wars and challenge each other to get forward. And that really, really helped. And then you've got all of the nice little things like the Nano site. There's a huge motivation just watching that graph trend upwards when you're writing.
Yep.
And I something.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Jim. Go ahead.
Okay.
Ladies first.
Wow. I'm sure glad you two aren't in the same room right now.
No, it's okay. I understand. He's intimidated.
Very nice.
It's the hat.
It took me totally off. I don't know where I was going to go now. what was the question?
Community.
Call me girl, you douche. that's the thing that really interested me. But when I figured out, hey, there's a nano.org or whatever it was, and I'm like, there's a whole community surrounding this thing, you know, and it's, I guess that struck me as interesting because I didn't know it was there and I didn't know there were such things as regional.
Yeah, municipal liaisons.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Grand Poobah, Royal Water Buffalo.
that's Flintstones, Jim.
Yeah. This is all kind of what we're doing. No. Yeah. So I didn't know there was this whole community aspect to it. And so it'll be interesting to kind of see, you know, who's out there. I think I submitted a buddy request to Scott over there, but I don't know what happened after that.
I approved it.
I think. Yeah.
I approve anybody though.
Hey.
I will say though that, and this is for, you know, anybody that's out there listening, as well as for you guys, for me personally, it helps to have somebody in MeetSpace, you know, that I see at least once a week that I'm already friends with that's going to be doing this. MeetSpace as opposed to... Yeah.
Oh, wait, no, that's the wrong social networking.
You know, I have a guy that I go to church with that is that I've hooked into doing this, and this is the second year that he's doing it. And so he and I are actually going to get together. But then I also have there's another podcaster, and he and I are going to basically, whoever has the most words at the end of any given week gets to humiliate the other guy and make him record it. So, you know, there's whatever it takes.
Kind of like what we're doing now, you mean?
Yeah.
I mean, you and Jim are doing now.
This is just humiliation for fun.
This is just a smackdown that happens every time Jim and I get in one space together.
I'm going to be interesting.
Yes, it'll be a lot of fun. So yeah, whatever it takes to get you motivated, whether it's knowing somebody, you know, in the real world that you can write with, or finding somebody online. But yeah, it's all about the community, because I think doing this kind of thing by yourself in a vacuum, while possible, is sort of crazy, because that's missing part of the point. It really is.
Yeah, for sure. No, I totally agree with you, and that was, I think, one of my big lessons that I got out of the first Nano that I participated in was it's not a vacuum. You really want to include, well, in podcasting, we call it a tribe, and writing can be a tribe too. So build your tribe and include them so that when they succeed, you can celebrate their success and vice versa.
Absolutely. And I hate to hijack the show because it is, you know, not my show. But my question for you guys is, are you going to be putting your work out there sort of live blogging your Nano, or are you going to be holding it back and then releasing it at a later point?
Ooh, good question.
I'm going to be putting my
stuff. Answer your question first. Go ahead. Yeah, that's how you conduct an interview. Ask a question. Say, let me answer that for you.
Okay, Jackass, you answer the question first.
I think I will. Maybe if I can remember.
you're gonna ask what the question is again, aren't you?
Here's what I thought. No, I'm not. Here's what I thought of doing. I thought, you know, and I think I tweeted this, and I think Scott saw this. Was I said, you know, I'm going to do NaNoWriMo this year, and I'm going to record my daily word output and release it as a podcast. Yeah. No, I'm not going to be doing. Number one, I don't have the discipline to do that.
Wow! Now the challenging is happening here.
No, unfortunately, I'm not the kind of person that
would be insane in any case. I figured I'd be insane.
And I just really don't care what you do. So, you know, I went through high school. I was kind of a geek. You know, that stuff just doesn't work for me.
Well, Mike, go to your happy place.
Yeah, happy place. I think for me, I will definitely be talking about NaNo the entire month, both in the podcast and through my blog. The fact that I'm only going to have 3 episodes of the podcast out in the month of November, at least that's the goal, means that you're not going to get daily updates. That's just crazy. There's no way I could do it. Not without having everybody who's currently agreed to listen, have them go away and say never again.
Yeah. And of course I do plan on releasing it later as a podcast novel.
Well, and for me, my first NaNo novel was actually a YA book.
Right.
And as I was telling Scott, while you were carrying children and groceries, I actually had 2 publishers interested in that book. The last publisher came back and said, okay, we're actually going to be doing YA a few years older than where your book happens to be. So, but she gave me some advice at a convention where I met her and said, a lot of the big publishers are looking for a series, a trilogy at least. So this is actually going to be the next book in the trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
So I actually have book 3 already written. That was last year's book. Just happens I've decided that book 2 needs to be the next one I write. They're kind of out of order there a little bit. But
well, you know where you're going.
Yeah, when I'm all done, I'll have 3 books ready to go for next year. And who knows what that'll bring.
Yeah.
Wait, so you've written book 1 and book 3, and now you're writing book 2.
Yeah, okay. Well, book 3 was supposed to be book 2.
Ah, gotcha.
But I realize now that it's not.
Who do you think you are, George Lucas?
Maybe. I'm going to write. Book 1 is going to become episode 4.
Yeah.
And I'm going to call it A New Hope. Wait, I might get sued if I do that, wouldn't I?
Let's let Scott now answer his question.
Do we want to hear? Yeah,
I am going to be putting my raw text out there as I write it. So, you know, I do that with a lot of stuff that I write, and I don't know. Maybe that's a mistake. Maybe it's not. Murr and one of her more recent "I Should Be" writings seem to indicate that was a mistake. But you know, that's how I
write. Murr has people that actually read hers.
Exactly. Exactly. And I've got like 3 subscribers, and one of them is my mom. So, you know, I am going to be putting it out there, though. So for anybody that wants to read the text of my NaNo, feel free to go to scottroche.com/blog. Ding.
Ding.
And that's where it'll be.
Of course, I don't know. After I hear Murr's finished product, I don't really think that's worth listening to. But I can imagine what the raw text looks like.
So, you didn't like playing for keeps?
I never listened to Playing for Keeps.
Oh, you should listen to Playing for Keeps. If you haven't listened to anything else she's done, you should listen to Playing for Keeps.
And so, you know, she's got a reputation to uphold, whatever that is. And so she risks losing audience by sticking the raw product out there. And me, you know, I feel kind of the same way. It's like, I don't want people to read the drivel before I edit it. But Scott, you know, his drivel may be better than mine.
You understand now, Jim, I'm going to have to put a disclaimer at the end of this episode. The comments and opinions expressed during this episode are not.
Well, and you know, I I don't mean half the things I say. I just like to take on the Goliaths and bring them down a peg.
It's the tea talking.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm glad that I'm you gonna, weren't
no,
having alcohol.
That's me. No, I'm not blaming it on tea.
Oh no,
it's not his fault.
Oh,
wait,
dear.
We could blame it all on T. Isn't he the one that speaks his mind and then gets ribbed for it?
Well, you do that all the time too, Jim. Jim is a big believer in speaking first.
Yeah, shoot first, ask questions later.
No. It's shoot first, think about asking questions later.
Shoot some more.
Then ask questions.
You are a Republican.
No, I'm just Jane.
basically she said don't necessarily put your stuff out there because once it's out there forever and an agent might see it or a publisher might see it. And I'm frankly not really worried about an agent or a publisher finding my website in the sea of websites.
No. Which ones are going to see her stuff? Because I thought she couldn't get one.
They're not hers. Everybody else's advice. Of course, she also gave the advice, as did Scott Sigler, as did a couple of other people, that you should not podcast unedited fiction, which all of them have done. So, you know.
Yeah, Nocturnal kind of went on and on and on and on and on.
Yeah.
But you know what? Be that as it may, I enjoyed every single episode of Nocturnal.
I didn't enjoy the first few. But
really?
once it got past maybe once the stuff really kicked in, I was hooked. I mean, I knew Scott well enough to know, okay, I'm going to give this plenty of leeway. Mm-hmm. And once it got past maybe the fourth or fifth episode, I was happy with it. But the first few episodes kind of dragged.
And I think the thing about Nocturnal is just he put so much stuff in it.
Oh yeah,
that maybe what he should have done was take some stuff out. But the stuff that was in there was all well written, I thought.
Yeah, it was relevant. It was just slower than I was used to from him. I was used to the can we say balls to the wall on this show?
Sure.
I was just used to that from Infected and Contagious and his earlier stuff, Earthcore and stuff. Mm-hmm. From the opening, it's just wide open. But Nocturnal wasn't that way. But once it got, like I said, about maybe in the first five or six episodes in, after that, it was wide open. So, but I mean, I think I'm okay with putting my raw text out there. Maybe it'll help somebody, maybe it won't, but it'll at least, I think for me, it's an accountability thing.
Well, and it kind of fits with the experimental nature of now.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what I podcast will at least be edited to some degree. Mm-hmm. I think that that's the way I'm going to roll for this one.
Well, and I'm really glad you used the word accountable because I want to know, what are your goals? What are you going to try to hit? What's your number count for November for Nano?
I think I can do 60,000.
Okay. Is that what you're shooting for?
I think that's reasonable. Sure. 60,000. I mean, I don't think that that's going to be the end of the story. I think that the story that I'm going to try and tell will probably be in the 80,000 word area. So I don't envision that I'm going to actually finish the novel in November, but I will at least cross the 60,000 word mark.
Okay. So 60,000 in 30 days. How about you, Jim? You've kind of talked about 80,000.
Yeah. I think that I can do 20,000 a week. The other beautiful thing about NaNoWriMo is it occurs not only during the Thanksgiving holidays, but also the third quarter of the NFL season, which is arguably the most interesting one. I've got a lot of distractions to deal with, but I think if I really apply myself and cut down on the distractions and get a good night's sleep, I think I can do it.
Okay, so you're going to try for 80,000 in 30
days.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're both more ambitious than I am because I'm in the process of finishing editing on my novel for submission. So I'm only going for 50,000, but I'm going for 50,000 in 21 days.
Ooh, okay. All right, Nathan Lowell.
Wow. Yeah, seriously.
Well, that's what I did last year.
21 days, like 21 hours.
Yeah, Nathan has a crazy crazy production. I think Murr actually challenged him to 50,000 in 15 days.
Yeah, she did. And he accepted.
He did.
But well, I think he types like he has the special computer that hooks directly into his brain.
Right. He's hooked up to the Matrix.
Yeah.
And Nathan, you know, I love Nathan as a person, and I think what he writes is really, really good. But unfortunately, the stories just bore me to tears just because there's not enough.
Oh, see.
Not enough boom. Not
it's
enough.
On. It's on now, boy. It's on now.
Well, for me, you know, the way I write cinematically, and the movies in my head are always action-packed, you know, and I guess being raised on, you know, Rambo and Conan and things like that. That's what, I guess that's where my brain gears toward. And so if it's in space and there's no space battles, I get bored easily.
Well, I get that. And I hear it, but that's what I like about his stuff is that it goes against some of the conventions. Mm-hmm. But you'll like mine. I'll have space battles in mine. They're aliens and all kinds of stuff. So
I might have to hook you up, Jim. I one of the guys that I know locally for Nano, his book is one long battle, continuous, 50,000 words worth.
Yikes.
Never stops.
Yeah, and that again. No, it's one extreme or the other.
Yeah.
Where's the character development in one long, drawn-out battle scene?
Oh, well, the only character development is who builds their muscles up while they chop off somebody else's. That's not what you meant, though, right?
Really not interested.
Well, I want to thank you both for taking the time to join me tonight. I know
you're welcome.
You both have families, and I would assume you both have lives as well.
Yeah.
It's still up in the air.
I am alive.
So thank you again. And, you know, I'll be watching to see how you're doing, and I hope that you'll be keeping me honest as well.
Absolutely.
Sure.
And if you'd like to hear or read more about Scott and Jim, you can go to www.spiritualtramp.com for Scott and to www.indianajim.net for more of Jim. I hope you enjoyed our little chat.
And sometimes
Hello.
Even...
Excuse me. Did one of you order the triple espresso campana?
That's mine, thanks. So you were saying?
I've been listening to Down from 10. It's this new mystery thingy where everyone is having the same dream.
Yeah, I heard it. It's like a science fiction convention where everyone's naked and there's this weird...
No. It's more like Douglas Adams redid Misery as a sex comedy.
Oh, come on. It's a Clockwork Orange played as a romance.
No. It's very simple. It's The Shining meets Clue. Kind of. I think.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's totally it.
You nailed it. That's perfect.
From the author of Sculpting God and the Antithesis Progression comes the audio fiction genre train wreck event of the year. Down from 10. It's The Shining meets Clue. Kinda. Find out for yourself at www.jdsawyer.net. You can make the whole world end if you just count down from 10. Also available on iTunes.
An alien. With maybe a little bit of American Psycho. I don't know. Do you like Huey Lewis in the News? Just tell me!
And that's our show. If you'd like to leave feedback, comments, or questions, you can call the voicemail line at 206-203-2031. Or you can send me an email at feedback@getpublishedpodcast.com. Send me a friend request on Facebook or friend feed at Michael Plested, or follow me on Twitter at mplested. I'd love to hear from you. Until next time, work hard, never give up, and maybe you too can get published. Thanks for listening.
Get Published is an Irreverent Muse production.